प्रभु को तागेला चय चाको मोरा स्वरूप रूपां का सनाता का दशरागो न तो पतित पावा कहां मोरा बता जुगा कहां कावेरा एका काले कोता गेला गौर नतुरा कोटि ब माता नाले पाचिब गोरंगा गुणरानिधि कोटा गेला पाब सब संगेरा संगे जे कोई लो बिना संग ना पाया कंदे नार चमगा जय वैष्णव ठाकुर जय वैष्णव ठाकुर वैष्णव ठाकुर वैष्णव ठाकुर जय वैष्णव ठाकुर Lila Pravista Astatarista Sisi Manista Vangri Sisi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Kijai Primsakoho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Sri Advaita Sigaradha Shivasati Gaura Bhakti Vrindi Kijai Sri Sri Radha Shama Sunda Gopa Gopinatha Shama Kunda Radha Kundi Gita Govardhan Kijai Grantaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam Kijai Shri Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami Kijai Shri Raghunath Das Goswami Kijai Shri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami Kijai Gaura Vimanandi All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the lotus feet of Sri Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. I'm just, no, sorry?
We can translate.
Probably not. No. Oh. Thank you. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 13, text number 28, 29, and 30. I'm going to step away from the usual format, as if my being here isn't enough of a departure from the usual format. And I'm just going to do the Sanskrit and translation on these three because we have a lot of territory to cover today. And if we sat here until noon, we couldn't cover it. So, Ekara Charayan Vachan Saram. Saramo Vanamavishat Pancha Shashu Triyamashu Hayana Pura Vishvaja. Translation. One day, five or six nights before the completion of the year, Krishna, tending the calves, entered the forest along with Balaram. Can you repeat? One day, five or six nights before the completion of the year, Krishna, tending the calves, entered the forest along with Balaram. 29. Tato vidurachcharato Gavo Vachan Hupavijan Govardhana Drishirasi Charanto Dadrishustinam. Can repeat. Thereafter, while pasturing atop Govardhan Hill, the cows looked down to find some green grass, and saw their calves pasturing near Vrindavan, not very far away. Drisvata to tatsneha vasho smrita. What's a good meter for this, Nagaraj? Ah, thank you. Drishvata tat sneha vasho smritatma sago brajo tyatma po durga marga dvipat kakud griva udashya pucho gadung kritair ashru paya javena. When the cows saw their own calves from the top of Govardhan Hill, they forgot themselves and their caretakers because of increased affection. And although the path was very rough, they ran toward their calves with great anxiety. Each running as if they had one pair of legs. Their milk bags full and flowing with milk. Their heads and tails raised. And their humps moving with their necks. They ran forcefully until they reached their calves to feed them. Srila Prabhupada's purport to the first and last verse, on verse 28. Up to this time, even Balaram was captured by the bewilderment that covered Brahma. Even Balaram did not know that all the calves and the cowherd boys were expansions of Krishna, or that he himself was also an expansion of Krishna. This was disclosed to Balaram just 5 or 6 days before the completion of the year and the purport to text 30. Generally, the calves and the cows are pastured separately. The elderly men take care of the cows, and the small children see to the calves. This time, however, the cows immediately forgot their position as soon as they saw the calves below Govardhan Hill, and they ran with great force, their tails erect and their front and hind legs joined until they reached their calves. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnanjana Shalakaya Shaksu Unmilitamina Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangumlam Jayate Girim Yakripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarino Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Garadhar Shivasini Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Vancha Kalpaturubhya Shakripa Sindhu Bahevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Yeah, I know you must be thinking, wow, look what they drug out of the mothballs. Somehow or another, Radhe Shyam had given me this opportunity to speak today, and I humbly pray for the blessings of the Vaishnavas and Srila Prabhupada that I may say something suitable. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, who we'll speak about today, mentions that without the mercy of Vishnu and the Vaishnavas, it is impossible to glorify either. So I'll simply beg for the mercy of all of you that I can somehow glorify the Lord and his devotees. So increased love and affection. In these last few verses, we've seen this mentioned quite a very wonderful and sweet chapter describing this activity of how we can increase our love and affection for Krishna. And this is, after all, why we have left that world and come to this world, to increase our love and affection for Krishna. It's a very simple concept, very easy to say, but we have to actually strive for it. And we're given a very nice example here in the lives of these wonderful residents of Vrindavan. Now, I also was examining how this chapter is also a very bittersweet chapter, because this is the, right now we're at about the one-third point through the final chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam as presented by Prabhupada during his manifested Leela here on this earth. This Srimad Bhagavatam, he expressed many times, was his life's work. And we're now nearing the end of what he presented as his life's work. So it's bittersweet in the sense that this is the end of what Prabhupada is presenting to us. But at the same time, it's also very wonderful, because that presentation is about how to increase our love and affection, which was also Prabhupada's life work, to teach all of us how to increase our love and affection for Krishna and put Krishna at the focus there. So we're just beginning to hear about these different pastimes of Krishna. We've discussed a few of the different demons and the activities in Vrindavan. We can understand from the culmination of this chapter 13 why it was that Srila Prabhupada was so interested in presenting Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in the early format as he did, more or less as a storybook format instead of the traditional Srimad Bhagavatam format. He had some expectation he may not make it all the way through till the end of the Bhagavatam. So he wanted that to be there for us. And very fortunate for us, he did so. So that we, even though the Bhagavatam from Prabhupada's lips finishes here, and we do have the continuation by his disciples, which is very glorious, but even though it ends from Srila Prabhupada's lips here, we have Krishna book, which he presented for that particular purpose, and this gives us all of the pastimes of Krishna in these references here. One of the recent classes that I thought really captured this mood of parental love and affection was the one given just a few days ago by Mother Jaigori. And very, very nicely, she spoke on this point, this parental love and affection. As we well know, there are different rasas in the spiritual world. And the amazing thing about these different rasas here in this world, I'm getting a little personal experience this right now within my work scenario, there's a very clear distinction of hierarchy. This is better than this, which is better than this, which is better than that, and okay, you're there. Everybody's appreciated, everybody's equal, but there's a structure. This is completely absent in the different rasas of relationship with Krishna. The gopis are not thinking, man, we're the gopis, we're better than the cows. The cows aren't thinking, oh, gee, I wish I could be Mother Jasoda, you know. Everybody is fully satisfied and fully spiritually satisfied within the particular relationship they have with Krishna. Because after all, this isn't the material world where we're hankering, oh, if I could just learn how to dress Radhasham Sundar, then my life would be complete. If I could only distribute books, then my life. We're always hankering that if I could do that other thing, I would be better off. In the spiritual world, that's absent. They're fully satisfied by the service that they're rendering to Krishna because it is the spiritual world. There is no hankering and lamentation. There is no beginning and end. It's not like, you know, it's all over and then they have to start something else again. So this is one of the very wonderful things. Yesterday's verse, I believe the phrase was, no limit to the increment of their affection. So it simply increases. We say this quite often. This is the nature of the spiritual world. It's constantly expanding. You know, so it's expanding on all dimensions, on all levels too, in ways that our linear thinking cannot even comprehend. So it's very wonderful in that sense. And these particular verses, and particularly these three or four purports here, yesterday's verses and these, I keep saying yesterday because Madan Mohan and I did a little tag team here. We got switched up on the schedule, and so we kind of swapped, and I spent some time working on yesterday's verses until I realized, wait a minute, that's the day I'm still working. So he and I traded. So these group of five verses here I've been kind of looking at, and the purports that Prabhupada gives really deal with this, how our love and affection for Krishna can, will, and should be constantly increasing. And when it increases, what does it bring with it? It brings with it the understanding that Krishna is everywhere. That Krishna is everything. And Prabhupada points out so clearly, the cowherd boys are Krishna, the calves were Krishna, even Lord Balaram was Krishna. Now, this is the thing that I find really quite amazing, that Lord Balaram, the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, Prabhupada has many times said the difference between Krishna and Balaram, one's blue, one's white. They're non-different. They have the same potency, the same energy, but Lord Balaram becomes bewildered for the sake of increased love and affection. He facilitates that by allowing himself to become bewildered. And this is in and of itself a testament to how strong Krishna's desire is to have his lila encompass everything. That even his own manifested expansion, Lord Balaram, becomes bewildered by this. Now, Raghunath Das Goswami wrote a very, very wonderful offering called the Brajavilasastava. You may want to look it up and read it, or maybe you have a copy of it. It's only about 100 and something verses, not so much. And one of the final verses is very interesting. Not Lord Brahma, he actually doesn't use the word Lord, he says, not Brahma, Narada, or Shiva, are the great Vaishnavas filled with love for Krishna, can understand the land of Braja. Only Lord Balaram and Mother Rohini can understand the land of Braja. How then can I understand the land of Braja? So only Balaram and Mother Rohini can understand. But in this case, even Balaram becomes covered over. And he can't understand what's going on. This is the amazing thing about Krishna's pastimes, is all of these so-called boundaries and rules and guidelines of how things function can completely be thrown to the wind if it will enhance Krishna's pastimes with his devotees. So this is what's going on here. Lord Balaram, completely. Now, the particular verse here, let me just read this translation again, text number 30. It is so nice. Just close your eyes for a moment. Everybody just take a second, close your eyes, kind of just begin to imagine the scene of Vrindavan and listen to this description that we're given. When the cows saw their own calves from the top of Govardhan Hill, they forgot themselves and their caretakers because of increased affection. And although the path was very rough, they ran towards their calves with great anxiety, each running as if with one pair of legs, their milk bags full and flowing with milk, their heads and tails raised, and their humps moving with their necks. They ran forcefully until they reached their calves to feed them. Is there a more joy-filled scene to be described anywhere? It's so wonderful. You can just imagine if one of the great masters, such as Pushkar, were to paint this scene. We would stand in... We would stand in front of that painting and look at it for hours on end. It's such a beautiful description. So this is the description of the spiritual world. And this is the description of the exchanges between Krishna and his devotees. And this is the type of meditation that we really should try to fix our minds on. This is the type of focus that we should really want to understand. Krishna's presence everywhere, you know. Today being the disappearance day of Raghunath Das Goswami, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, and Krishnadas Kaviraj, this is clearly the mood and the vision that these devotees had. This understanding of Vrindavan, that Krishna is everywhere, and the beauty and unlimited pleasure of his pastimes and of hearing these pastimes. The three of them, they were each encouraged, instructed, trained, and ordered by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that they should go to Vrindavan, rediscover Vrindavan, open up all the hidden secrets and the lost pilgrimage places and places where the Lord's pastimes had taken place, and assist the other Goswamis in this service, in this activity, so that persons 500 years down the line, like you and I, would be able to actually appreciate these things, both while we're sitting in, as Prabhupada described, remote places like Gainesville, Florida, and when we get the opportunity to go. It's a very common thing now that devotees that are qualified and knowledgeable in these subjects take groups of devotees around Vrindavan to the different pilgrimage places, around Radhakund, around Govardhan, and discuss at all these places, stopping and talking and just entering into the mood of these things. So this was the mood of the Goswamis themselves. Now, Raghunath Das Goswami, it's interesting because Krishnadas Kaviraj himself says that in describing Raghunath Das Goswami, he says he considers himself unable and speechless to even speak about the glories of Raghunath Das Goswami. So taking the permission of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami and begging his blessings, we'll try and say a few things about Raghunath Das Goswami. Many of the details of his life are well known to us, and sometimes we may say, we've heard these before, why should I listen again? I've got something else I can do. But this is the whole point of glorifying the Vaishnavacharyas, is to hear and rehear and hear again these pastimes so that somehow or another they will break through that stone-cold heart that we have somehow or another, they will actually enter into our consciousness, and we can be inspired by this example to raise the bar on our own devotional service. And this is rather appropriate as we're approaching the month of Kartik, and it's a wonderful time to raise the bar in our personal devotional service. So Raghunath Das Goswami, in his later years, once he had gone to Vrindavan as instructed by Mahaprabhu, he resided predominantly on the banks of Radhakund. This is where he lived. Now, this was not the Radhakund that we all immediately, when you hear the word Radhakund, bring into our mind. There's that beautiful picture floating around the internet. It's a panoramic view of Radhakund, probably a little bit photoshopped, but just these incredibly colored clouds and reflecting off the water of Radhakund, and it's viewing from Janava's Ghat towards the convergence of the two, and very, very nice. And that's the Radhakund we all think of. But that's not the Radhakund that was existing at the time of Raghunath Das Goswami. At the time of Raghunath Das Goswami, all that was there was Kanchanakund, which is the small kund at the base. When they clean Radhakund out every 20 years or so, and they go down to just the kund that the gopis dug and that water there. So he would sit on the banks there, and just very nicely he was engaged in chanting, meditating sometimes on, it would be so nice if we could, make this a little bigger here and put some steps there, and then more devotees could come. And, like that, he would think about how he could expand the glories and the presence of Sri Radhakund. And what a wonderful service. He would think, wow, because we greatly benefit from it today. So when he would think like this, he would chastise himself. Ugh, do this, it's going to take all kinds of money. You have to seek out large donations, and then you have to supervise all the construction and stay on to, it's going to disturb my budget. So he would just put the idea from his mind. Let me just sit here and chant and speak about the Lord like that. Because at this time, this was all there was. There was no distraction like we may find in the modern Radhakund of so many shopkeepers and a variety of temples to visit and take darshan of the deities. It's just Radhakund. So at this time, the same time period in Badrinath. Now, of course, Badrinath is very, very far to the north. From Vrindavan, you can get a bus, 10-hour bus ride to Rishikesh, and then another 10-hour bus ride to Badrinath. So 20 hours by bus from Vrindavan. There was one very, very wealthy businessman, and he had performed the great austerity of walking to Badrinath in the Himalayas. Some of you may have had that opportunity during the old Padyatra days. I know a few of us here did get that opportunity to walk from Rishikesh up to Badrinath. And he arrived at the Sri Badrinath Mandir, and he very humbly offered his obeisances to the Lord and gazed upon the beautiful form. And then he thought, I have so much wealth. Let me offer this wealth to the Lord to be engaged in his service. So he was thinking like this, and this was his intent. So as he took rest that evening, the amazing dream came to him, and Lord Badrinath appeared to him in this dream. He said, I've understood your heart. He said, so what you do now is you take that wealth that you want to donate to me here, and you go to Vrindavan. And in Vrindavan, you go to Radhakund. And at Radhakund, you find one renunciate there, Raghunath Das Goswami. And he's residing near there. And you inform him that you want to give him this donation to increase and to renovate and expand Radhakund and Shamakund. Now, Badrinath takes this a step further. He says, most likely, Raghunath Das will decline. But if he declines, then you point out to him that I have come to you in this dream, and this is my instruction to you, so that he doesn't neglect this service. So in this way, the businessman was very, very happy. He had a desire. He had accumulated wealth, not for the sake of increasing the number of palaces he owned and the number of servants he had, and his prophet said the number of chapatis he could eat a day, which is only two or three, but for the sake of offering it to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in that way, he was given this service, and he was so satisfied. So very joyfully, he did the trek back down through Rishikesh, back down to Vrindavan, went to Radhakund, and he found Raghunath Das Goswami. So he told him, he said, "My dear Raghunath Das," he said, "Lord Badrinath has given me the following instructions." And Raghunath was, that's very nice, thank you, but no, I've already decided against this. No, no, he also told me you may decline. So he said that I should point out to you that this is his desire that you do this service with this money. So Raghunath Das was very amazed to hear this, that he was thinking in this way. At the same time, the Lord was manifesting to someone else to fulfill that desire for his service. So he set about beginning this process. I believe it was at this time that he had acquired, if you go to the Vrindavan Institute, they have a document I've seen. He had acquired the ownership of Radhakund as a title, ownership, and that was transferred over to Jiva Goswami in his later years. But this allowed him to do all this expansion. So it's a very wonderful old document to see. It's very nice. So he began the process, and excavating and renovating in a certain number of steps, not the number of steps that we currently see. Those were added a bit later. But in any way, so expanding like this. Now, as he was beginning to etch out, he'd already set up Radhakund, and we've all been there. It's a wonderful, nice square. And so then he began to do Shamakund. And at one point in the night, he had a dream. And Yudhishthira Maharaj appeared to him in this dream and said to him, "You're just going on that one side now, and there are five beautiful tall palm trees there. And these are myself and my four brothers. We reside at the site of Shamakund to take darshan of Shamakund. So please you avoid those trees." So if you look at Shamakund, it's a little irregular in its shape. You know, you may not notice it so much when you're doing parikrama, but if you look at a map or if you look at an aerial view, it's a little irregular in its shape to accommodate those trees. So in this way, Raghunath Das arranged for that. And then, of course, nearby the kuns of the different eight gopis and like that, you know, he arranged all of this. And so he was very, very happy. Very, actually, it's described that the ecstasy that he experienced was just boundless. He was so satisfied. So he lived in this way in Radhakund, and each night he would stay under a different tree. We know that famous verse from Srinivasacharya. And sometimes he would even leave Radhakund and go to Manasi Ganga and stay there. Beautiful pastimes of Radha and Krishna there also. And of course, we know at this time, Vrindavan was very much overgrown. It was still like a jungle. There are some parts of Braj Mandala that if you can go to, it's still forested. But at this time, all of it was like that. So, you know, he was always he wasn't. That was the problem. There were always wild animals, ferocious tigers and things like that. And, you know, sometimes Radha and Krishna would come and personally protect him in situations like this. So the local devotees had requested that he should build a hut for himself, little bhajan kutir. And no, I just stay under the different trees, you know. But one time, he was doing his bhajan, and Sanatana Goswami came to meet with Gopal Bhatta Goswami, and they were going to go to have darshan and talk with Raghunath Das Goswami. And when they came there, they found that Raghunath Das was sitting under a tree, but more importantly, just near there, Sri Krishna himself was standing, keeping tigers away, because the tigers would come all nice. Soft sadhu there, you know, and very tasty. No hard exterior. The heart's also very soft. So in this way, Krishna was keeping the tigers away. So the two of them encouraged that, you have to build yourself a hut, you know, like that. So in this way, and then there was the other occasion where he was sitting out in the sun and Srimati Radhika was standing behind him holding her dupatta over him to protect him from the harsh sun, and so much absorbed in his bhajan, he didn't even know this. And here again, the Goswami saw, though, in this way, they made him agree to get some residence for himself in that way. And now, Raghunath Das Goswami was a very strict follower of Srimati Radhika. And of course, we know there are two camps of gopis, Radhika's camp and Chandravali's camp. And for the sake of pastime, there's a little competition between them. And so Raghunath Das Goswami, he counted himself among the servants of Srimati Radharani. And as Chandavali is the so-called competitor of Srimati Radharani, he never went to her kunja, never went to her bathing ghat, never had any conversation about any of her cowherd girlfriends, her shakis like that, you know. He didn't want anything to do with that. So one day, one bridge bossy came to visit him. And this bridge bossy brought a little leaf cup of buttermilk. This is at a time where Raghunath Das Goswami was eating a handful of buttermilk every day. And even that, he was thinking, oh, I'm such a sense enjoyer. I eat this buttermilk every day, just enjoy my tongue. Imagine that. Handful of buttermilk. And sometimes every 3 days, he just wouldn't eat it at all. So in this way, this bridge bossy thought, let me bring this little gift to Raghunath Das Goswami. So he came and Raghunath Das accepted it very nicely. And he asked, this particular devotee was a cowherder. And he had been at Shakistali, which is a place of Chandavali's. This is her kund. And so he had been there just prior to coming. So they have this nice tree there, a palash tree, and it's got, the leaves are kind of cup-shaped. So he had put this in, and so he gave this to Raghunath, and Raghunath said, oh, very, very nice. Yeah. Where did you get this leaf from? He said, I got it from Shakistali. I found the trees there. And when Raghunath Das heard this word, because it indicated the place of Chandavali, he immediately went into rage and threw the buttermilk in the cup at him, and just didn't want anything to do with it, and sent the devotee away. You know, it was so strict in his devotion to Srimati Radharani. And this devotee was very amazed at how strict Raghunath Das Goswami was like that. There was another pastime when he was residing at Radhakund. And just as we tried to our best a few moments ago to close our eyes and go into a nice meditation of the cows on top of the hill and running down over the rough rocks and maybe some fallen tree limbs and going to the calves with their milk bags swaying back and forth filled with milk and flowing out of the udders and then going to their calves and feeding them like that. So Raghunath Das Goswami, 22, 23 hours a day he would be in meditation. This one particular time, he was meditating deep within his mind that he was serving Radha and Govinda. And in this meditation, he cooked up some nice sweet rice. Very tasty sweet rice. Of course, he's a renunciate. He's living on the bank of Radhakund, different tree. Okay, now he's got a straw hut. What does he have to offer? He's got nothing to offer. So in his mind, he's offering. As mentioned, manasa seva is very, very important and accepted in our mind. So in this way, he's offering. And he cooks the sweet rice up very, very nicely, and he offers it to Radha Govinda, and they accept the offering, and they share it with all their shakis, and everybody's tasting it so nicely, and everybody's all finished. And so then the attendants come, and they offer it to Raghunath. You please also have some prasad. So he takes it. This is the Mahaprasad from Radha Govinda is so tasty. You know, it's kind of like at the Sunday feast line here when it's a really good blackberry sweet rice. The mango sweet rice is nice, but it's not the best. Nice blackberry sweet rice, and maybe they put a little bit of camphor in it, you know, special festival, you know. And, it's just so tasty. So you go back and you get a little more. And then, okay, nobody's looking, you go back and get another cup. And they put it in those little bitty cups, right? You throw the little bitty cup away and you get a real cup. Here, fill this. You know, so you really indulge like this. So Raghunath Das Goswami in this meditation was enjoying so much of this nectarian sweet rice. So he became sick. He got very, very sick, and he was having great stomach pains. And the locals that were staying near him, they became very concerned, and they called for a kavi, an Ayurvedic doctor, rather. They called him, you please come and take care of Raghunath and what's going on, you know. So the doctor came, and the devotees were all standing around. They were very concerned. Sanatana Goswami came from Mathura, and they were all looking and trying to understand what's going on with him, you know. And so the doctor examined him, and he said, He said, he has got some stomach pain from taking too much milk products. He has overeaten dairy. The devotee's like, well, no, your diagnosis is wrong. Raghunath Das Goswami eats a palmful of buttermilk every 3 days. How can they, your diagnosis is wrong. So In this way, the doctors confirmed that this was the case, and Raghunath Das Goswami confirmed that this had actually taken place in his meditation. So real was his understanding of his service to Radha Govinda that he actually got the immediate result of it. So, 2, 3, 4 more pages just on Raghunath Das. Of course, we can't speak about Raghunath Das without mentioning his Govardhan Shila. This Govardhan Shila was actually given to Mahaprabhu by one Brahmin. And this Brahmin had arrived in Puri with the Govardhan Shila and a Kunjamala and had been worshipping. He lived on Govardhan Hill and he'd been worshipping, and he gave the Govardhan Shila to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It mentions that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu worshipped the Shila for 2 years. And not just worshipped the Shila, but would sometimes offer boga to him, sometimes touch the Govardhan Shila to his chest, sometimes embrace it to his forehead, sometimes bathe it with his own tears. We can just imagine the level of intimacy, the service of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So in this way, he gave this as a gift to Raghunath Das Goswami, instructed him how to worship this Govardhan Shila. And if you go to the Radha Gokulananda temple in Vrindavan, where the Samadhi of Narottam Das, Pushpush Samadhi of Narottam Das Thakur is, and the Samadhi of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, and so many other places, and so many other deities, you can actually get darshan of this deity. It's got a little thumbprint kind of in the top where Mahaprabhu would hold it, and when he would have his prayers, do his chanting like that. Very, very nice. So we'll speak a little bit about Raghunath Bhatta Goswami now. Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, like many of the Goswamis, came from a very, very glorious family. His father was Tapan Mishra. And Tapan Mishra lived in the Bengal area, near where Mahaprabhu's Navadvipa pastimes were. And he was a professor of grammar. And so he decided to move to Navadvipa, because as we all know, Navadvipa at the time was the seat of learning and education in the Vaishnava culture. And he resided there and became an associate of Nimai Pandit. And, you know, he was, you know, wanting to kind of come to terms, if you will, with the real meaning, the perfection of life, the inner meaning of the purpose of human life. And so he was in anxiety like this back and forth in his mind. So one night he had a dream, and this Brahmin came to him and said to him, "Mishraji, don't worry. Nimai Pandit has just arrived very near to here. And he will teach you the perfection, the practice of perfection, and the goal of this life. Nimai Pandit is not a man. He is the Supreme Lord himself. And although he is the creator of the universe, he has accepted the form of a man in order to deliver that same universe." And in saying this, the Brahmin disappeared from his dream. So the following morning, Tapan Mishra performed his morning duties, and he set out to find Mahaprabhu. Got up, you know, did his bath, his puja, his mantras, you know, his japa, whatever, and went out looking for Mahaprabhu, and he found him. And he was sitting on a bench in front of his home, illuminating the entire courtyard with the effulgence manifesting from his very form. It was like the sun had descended right in the middle of that courtyard. So his eyes, as described, were like fresh lotus petals, and his fine black hair was curly and flowing at a very strong chest, a fine sacred thread, and a brilliant yellow dhoti illuminating all the directions. So Tapan Mishra fell at his lotus feet. "O most merciful one, I am the most fallen. Please be merciful unto me and instruct me." So the Lord was very, very happy in this way and instructed him, spoke with him. And in due course of time, well, one particular important thing Mahaprabhu said here. He said, in every millennium, the Supreme Lord invents himself in order to deliver the fallen souls and instruct them in the appropriate form of worship for each age. In the Satya Yuga, it's meditation. In the Treta Yuga, it is sacrifice. In the Dwarpa Yuga, it's deity worship. And in the Kali Yuga, it is the Sankirtan process for attaining ultimate salvation. In each of the four ages, there is a particular process for deliverance. And in this age, the Dharma is Nam Sankirtan. So he was satisfying that inner desire of Tapan Mishra. So at any rate, he instructed Tapan Mishra that you should go and reside at Varanasi. And the interesting thing is, at that time, Varanasi was filled with nothing but Mayavadis and impersonalists. So he told him, he said, there's one devotee living there, Chandrasekhar Acharya. You go and live with him, and the two of you spread Nam Sankirtan throughout Varanasi like that. He said, sometime later I will come and visit. So Tapan Mishra moved there, and in due course of time he had a little boy, Raghunath. And after Mahaprabhu took his sannyas lila and did his travels, he came to Varanasi. And when he came there, he, of course, there's a whole story about his getting there and how it all took place. But at any rate, he arrived there. And Tapan Mishra was taking his bath at one of the bathing ghats in Varanasi, and he began hearing the holy name of Kirtan. He's like, how is it possible? I haven't heard the holy name here in Navadvip, you know? So he went across, and he found on the other side there was a sannyasi of unprecedented beauty and stature. And he had this supernatural effulgence emanating from him. He thought, wait a minute, I've seen that effulgence before. And he remembered the time that he met Nimai Pandit. He said, could this possibly be Nimai Pandit? Could he have finally come here like he promised he would? So he met him very, very joyful heart. He embraced his feet and placed them to his head. And Lord Chaitanya picked him off the ground and embraced him to his chest. And so in this way, they stayed there for many times. Now, when Mahaprabhu was there, he would stay at the house of Tapan Mishra. But Mahaprabhu was such a considerate guest. He would stay at the house of Tapan Mishra, but he would take his meals at the house of Chandrasekhar Acharya. So A, both devotees got to share the service, but B, there was no undue difficulty for one or the other. I'm hosting him and feeding him. Of course, nobody would object. But Mahaprabhu was spreading himself out like that amongst it. Okay, I'll stay at your house, but I'll take my meals at your house. So in this way, he would stay with Tapan Mishra. And at the time, Tapan Mishra had this little boy. And the son was about 9 years old, they say. About 9 years old. How old are you? Almost. So just a little older than you. And so during that time, Raghunath Das got this wonderful service. He would go and he would massage Lord Chaitanya's feet. Lord Chaitanya comes to stay at your house, you get to massage his feet. Or he would bring the meals his mother would cook, and okay, you take to him. And he would go into Lord Chaitanya and put the prasadam there in front of him. He would wash his clothes, you know, like that. So he'd get to do this service regularly. And Lord Chaitanya was so kind to him. He would embrace him, he would sit him on his lap, you know, and just have his arm around him, pat him on the head, and just show unlimited affection to him. And so in this way, you know, Tapan Mishra, Balabhadra Bhattacharya was also cooking. He was traveling with Mahaprabhu, and they would arrange like this. And then after Mahaprabhu would take his meal, Raghunath would come, and he would give him some Mahaprasadam right off his plate, you know, because you did such nice service. Thank you. Here, have a puri, you know, like that. So, or whatever he was eating, you know. So in this way, Tapan Mishra's son, Raghunath, got the extreme mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Raghunath Das stayed at his home in this way for, it's about 28 years. And, you know, during that time, he was always hankering to be able to have more association with, hankering to get the opportunity to spend more time with Mahaprabhu. So when he grew up a bit, he went to Jagannath Puri. And he stayed in Jagannath Puri. And he was there for 8 months. And he would cook for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because he was an expert cook. He was an absolutely amazing cook. So, you know, he would render these different services as Mahaprabhu while he was there. And the Lord made sure that, actually, one nice story, when he was traveling to Puri, there was one Brahmin devotee that was traveling with him. And he was a Rambhakta. And so this Rambhakta wanted to do so much service to Raghunath. Let me carry your bags on my head. You know, let me, you know, be responsible for traveling and taking care of your needs like this. And, you know, he was trying so hard to serve him. And you know, he didn't want to accept that. us. He didn't want to accept that service, you know. So when they arrived in Puri, an interesting thing happened. That Raghunath Bhatta, he got so much mercy from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So much mercy. And Mahaprabhu gave him prasadam and arranged for, you know, his accommodations. And, you know, it mentions, though, that this Ram Bhakta hardly got any acknowledgement, you know, from Lord Chaitanya. It's in a little different mood there that he had. So at any rate, as I mentioned, during this time, he was cooking very nicely. And then at the end of the 8 months, Mahaprabhu told me, he said, now you go back to Varanasi and you serve your elderly parents. They're wonderful Vaishnavas. And you take care of them. They're now aged and infirmed. Sometimes we see some of our devotees will take care of their older parents, you know, and it's a very noble service. And it was instructed by Mahaprabhu to, of all people, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, you go back and take care of your elderly parents. They've raised you, they've made you a devotee, they've done so much nice service. Now you do some service for them. So when he was leaving, the Lord did one very nice thing. He took his own neck beads and gave them as a present to Raghunath Bhatta. And he gave him a tulsi garland from the deity of Jagannath. Now, I think we're all aware the deity of Jagannath is a little bit bigger than Radhishyam. And we've seen the tulsi garland Shamsundar wears very, very long. And if you happen to get that prasad, it's so amazing. So Lord Chaitanya arranged for Raghunath Bhatta to get this tulsi garland from Jagannath. It was 9 feet long. So he wrapped it up very nicely and put it in a bag and took it with him. And he returned back home. And he mentions he very lovingly took care of his parents until they departed from this world. And then he made his way to Vrindavan. Now, during this time that he was caring for his parents, he studied the Bhagavatam extensively. You know, very, very seriously. And he kept with him the instruction when Mahaprabhu gave him those presents and told him, you take care of your parents and then you go to Vrindavan. He kept that with him. Mahaprabhu told him, you go to Vrindavan after your parents have passed from this world. You associate with Rupa, the Sanatan. You have much work to do there. I've got to stay here in Puri, and I want you Goswamis to take care of bringing Vrindavan back to its glory like that. So, you know, in this way, this was his meditation. And then when he finally did depart from Varanasi and travel, he arrived in Vrindavan. And when he arrived there, Rupa and Sanatan were so happy to see him. They were so affectionate with him. They embraced him and were so satisfied. And you know how it is, you want to know all the news. So how's this one doing? And oh, tell us about your dear parents, you know. And how's Chandrasekhar Acharya? And you were in Puri, you know, and how, you know, like this. So all the different news was going on like that. And the particular quality that Raghunath Bhatta was known for was his exceptional humility and meekness. And he was very gifted at reciting the Bhagavatam because he had spent all this time studying it. And he knew, I think it was 3 or 4 different ways to sing the Bhagavatam. And he would always recite it like this. And the devotees were so satisfied by hearing him. Rupa and Sanatan just enjoyed like anything hearing him speaking about the different pastimes of, you know, the Srimad Bhagavatam in this way. So mentions that he had a very beautiful voice, very beautiful voice in speaking of the Bhagavatam, very satisfying to the devotees. Raghunath Bhatta was extremely renounced and extremely serious in his mood of service and in his appreciation of Vaishnavas. He would never speak or listen to any gossip about other devotees. This is probably the biggest pitfall that we find in our devotional service, especially in the modern age of so much internet access and emails, Twitters, and this is and that's, that we can so easily gossip about each other. And it's a very destructive process. So Raghunath Das would never hear anything like this. He would simply discuss about the Lord and the Lord's pastimes. That if he happened to hear some devotee saying something, he would simply disavow whatever was said. All I know is that they're rendering very nice service, and he would leave that spot immediately. Our Jayananda was like that. Those of you that had the opportunity to associate with Jayananda, he wouldn't listen to any type of, you know, despairing discussion about other devotees like that, you know. This talk of so-called Vaishnava misbehavior, you know. He was very aloof from that. So when Raghunath would get really, really absorbed in this mood of remembering Mahaprabhu, he would take this Tulsi garland and he would just smell the fragrance of that Tulsi garland. He would take the Tulsi beads that Mahaprabhu had given him and touch them to his forehead and hold them to his heart in this way. And you know, in this way, he was very fortunate to have this ability to remember very closely the Lord's pastime. So there's one very nice quote about Raghunath Bhatta I'd like to finish with here. As I look, it's from the Bhakti Ratnakara. As I look upon the Samadhi tomb of Raghunath Bhatta, my heart breaks and my eyes are awash with tears. But who is not overjoyed as soon as he hears Raghunath Bhatta Goswami's glories? He was such an expert teacher of all the scriptures that even Brihaspati would joyfully cheer upon hearing Raghunath's explanations of Vaishnava doctrine. There is nothing to which his discourses on the Bhagavad can be compared. Even Vyas himself wishes to sit and listen to Raghunath Bhatta speak, knowing that this will bring him great happiness. Even the gods themselves are astonished when they observe his devotional practices. When the devotees heard Srinivasacharya glorify Raghunath Bhatta Goswami in this way, they fell to the ground and offered their respectful obeisances. So very, very wonderful description of the pastimes of Raghunath Bhatta, or some of those pastimes, I should say. And then our third personality today, of course, is Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. Like whatever your particular flavor is, and find everything you need to know about that author. Krishnadas Kaviraj wrote the most superlatively glorious Chaitanya Charitamrita. And this Chaitanya Charitamrita is accepted by all to be the topmost description of the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And all of the details of Mahaprabhu's pastimes, as well as in certain parts of the Adi Lila, so many details of all the different devotees and their backgrounds and so on like that. No information is there about himself. Practically none. A little bit has come to light over the years, but basically the lineage and the family line and the history of Raghunath Das Goswami is very little. It's said that he was born in Naihati, in that district, and that his father, Bhagiratha, and his mother, Sunanda, and that he had one younger brother, Shyam, and that his father apparently died when he was very, very young, and as a result, the family was in a little distressful condition. And from his very youth, he displayed a very strong inclination towards renunciation. He was not at all interested in any of the trappings or any of the details of household life. He did have a set of Gornitai deities that I'm not clear at what point he achieved those deities, but those deities he still worshipped. So there's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur discusses the conversation about the caste of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. Some supporters of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami say he must have been from one of the three upper castes, from the Brahmins, the Kshatriyas, or the Vaishyas, the Vaijas. The Kaviraj title, Bhaktisiddhanta states, is a title given to those who have proven themselves by composing literary works which have achieved renown for their quality in learned circles. So, but this title is also given to those who are Ayurvedic doctors. So for this reason, some people assume that he may have been from the Vaidya class as a physician. So it's difficult to actually comprehend what his particular background is. But this is actually a point that's used in its favor. Sometimes there's what appears to be a negative issue that's actually used to make a positive point. And in this case, it's very important. Because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, as well as Narottam Das Thakur, as well as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and our own Srila Prabhupada, stressed that the physical birth the particular caste and background is not the prominent factor in a Vaishnava's life. That what they, where they came from, what their birth was, is not the real issue. That what is the real issue is the activities that they perform, the consciousness that they maintain. So, as we know from Shastra, that the Vaishnava is the best of all persons, and that the birth that a Vaishnava takes is not an issue. It mentions that one who judges a Vaishnava by their birth is the most sinful of persons. From Dhammadas Thakura speaks about this in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. So, and in the same way, there's no solid or unanimous conclusion about his marital status. Some people say he was a lifelong brahmachari, and that when he went to Vrindavan, he just continued in that way. Others say that he left a wife and child when he went to Vrindavan, and that that's why he would never speak about his previous family, because as a renunciate, he would never mention his wife and children from his previous family. So Srila Prabhupada mentions in this regard that after arriving in Vrindavan, Krishna Das became indifferent to talk about his previous family life and was totally absorbed in Krishna Katha. This behavior is appropriate for someone in the third or fourth station and completely committed to devotional life. The Chaitanya Charitamrita is the composition of someone who has reached the status of Paramahamsa and is beyond the four ashrams. He is known as Kaviraj Goswami to his spiritual family. But of course, this is here again the positive of a apparent negative. That apparently, oh, we don't, was he married, was he not married? Not an issue. Because the activities performed are of the highest Paramahamsa level. And therefore, these become the focus of his life. These become the predominant features of his life. Now, of course, Krishna Das Kaviraj's reasoning to go to Vrindavan, we know the story quite well. It was a more or less a what we now refer to as a 24-hour kirtan. And he was having this program at his home, and then there was some controversy and some difficulty, and Minikatam Ram ended up breaking his flute, and Gunarnava Pujari some curses back and forth, and we all know this story. So that night, in a very unsettled, unhappy mood about the things that had taken place, Nityananda had a dream. Krishna's Kaviraj had a dream, and in that dream, Nityananda appeared to him. And the description that Krishna Das Kaviraj himself gives in the Chaitanya Charitamrita is so beautiful. Nityananda was glowing with an effulgence, and he had this beautiful bluish dhoti on and a really just amazing turban and an incredible garland that the fragrance was so strong that there were bumblebees flying around it. Not the kind of bumblebees that are trying to sting you, but the bumblebees that are only looking for the nectar. And they were floating around the garland, and on one side someone was fanning him, and on another side someone had a chamara waving, and he was dancing so sweetly, and his very delicate ankle bells were tinkling as he would dance, and one devotee was playing the mridanga to the side, another one with the kartels, and a little kirtan was going, and in this way he was calling out, Krishna Das, wake up, rise, rise. From this point you should now go to Vrindavan, and all good fortune will come to you. So this was the impetus for Krishna Das to go to Vrindavan. I think if any of us had a dream like that, we would immediately pack up our bags and go to Vrindavan. At least I would hope so. So in this way, of course, he arrived in Vrindavan. And actually it mentions that when he had this vision, he composed this very wonderful prayer, which he included in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I am more sinful than Jagaya Madai, and lower than a worm in the stool. Whoever hears my name loses the results of his virtuous deeds, and whoever utters my name commits a sin. Other than Nityananda, could anyone in this world show mercy to one as abominable as me? Nityananda is the incarnation of mercy. He is so intoxicated by ecstatic love, he does not discriminate between the good and the bad, and therefore he's given his mercy to me. He delivers anyone who falls down in submission before him. Therefore, he has delivered such a sinful and fallen person as myself. So, when Krishna Das Kaviraj arrived in Vrindavan, he took shelter of the Goswamis there. Of course, Rupa Goswami, Sanatan, Jiva, Raghunath, Raghunath Bhatta, Gopal. They were all his instructing spiritual masters. And he concludes his Chaitanya Charitamrita, each chapter, offering respects to them. And he took actual initiation from Raghunath Das Goswami and lived a very renounced life in Shamakund. Raghunath Das, you remember, lived at Radhakund at that time. He was living at Shamakund just next door. And very, very, very ecstatic in hearing the pastimes. At that time, Raghunath Das had been placed when he was in Puri in the care of Srup Damodar and had heard Srup Damodar's complete descriptions of Mahaprabhu. So he had memorized them, and he came to Vrindavan, and as we know, he had wanted to commit spiritual suicide by jumping off Govardhan after Srup Damodar and Mahaprabhu had departed. And the Goswami said, no, each day you speak about the pastimes of Mahaprabhu. So Krishnadas Kaviraj was hearing these pastimes, and that was part of the basis for what he had memorized and used for writing his Chaitanya Charitamrita. And so the devotees at this time, they were regularly gathering to hear at Govindaji temple to hear the readings of the Chaitanya Bhagavat, which was out at that time. And they were eager to hear about the other pastimes of Mahaprabhu that aren't described in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. And so they all turned to Kaviraj Goswami and said, you should write these pastimes. You've heard them all directly from Raghunath Das Goswami. And we ask you that you do this. And at that time it mentions that he then went to Madan Mohan and prayed to Madan Mohan, you please give me your blessings that if this is what you want me to do, I will do it. And that the deity's garland fell and was given to him as the divine sanction of the effort that he should make in this particular regards. So when he began, after getting the blessing of the deity, what was it we were mentioning at the beginning here, that one cannot proceed in describing the glories of the Lord and his associates without the mercy of Vishnu, Madan Mohan, and the Vaishnavas. So he went to Raghunath Bhatta Goswami and Lokanath Goswami, and he begged both of them, please, you give me your blessings that I can take on this task that the devotees have asked me to do. And Lokanath said, yes, you can do so, but on one condition. You don't mention my name. So you don't find the pastimes of Lokanath Goswami mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Like our Srila Prabhupada, Lokanath had started this, actually it appears at an even later age in his life, and he was concerned about his ability to finish his, as I've mentioned in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada was concerned about his ability to finish the entire Bhagavatam, so he did the Krishna book. So Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami writes, I have now become old and disturbed by invalidity. While writing, my hands tremble. I cannot remember anything, nor can I see or hear properly. Still I write, and this is a great wonder. So he's appreciating the glories of the Lord in giving him blessings. He continues, this Chaitanya Charitamrita is being dictated to me by Madan Mohan. My writing is like the repetition of a parrot. I write as Madan Gopal orders me, just as a wooden marionette is made to dance by a puppeteer. So he continues, Sri Sarup Damodar Goswami wrote an outline, I'm sorry, this is from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that Sri Sarup Damodar had written an outline of Mahaprabhu's later activities in Puri, and Raghunath Das had memorized those verses and would speak them to all the Goswamis. And these verses were not written down, but they became memorized by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. And it describes that Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami's Chaitanya Charitamrita is the most accurate, authentic, and philosophical biography of Lord Chaitanya. Every line is full of infinite humility and enthusiasm and devotion for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sri Nityananda Prabhu. Krishnadas Kaviraj has the wonderful power of speaking without offending anyone, even when rebuking his opponents. So I'll just finish here with a quote from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur about the Chaitanya Charitamrita as he was delivering it to his disciples. If it were to happen that all of the books in this world were to be destroyed, leaving only the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Chaitanya Charitamrita, then the people of this world would still be able to achieve the ultimate goal of life. Even if the Srimad Bhagavatam were lost, leaving only the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there would be no loss for humanity. The absolute truth is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the combined form of Radha and Krishna. The Chaitanya Charitamrita is his sound incarnation. The divine mystery of Radharani's divine status and glories are found therein. Can there be any doubt, therefore, of the supreme status of this piece of transcendental literature? This is from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur about the work Chaitanya Charitamrita of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. So I hope that you found some satisfaction and enjoyment in these pastimes describing these devotees. I have gone way beyond the allotted time and probably will not be asked back for another year or two. So I'm going to skip any questions or comments and not impose upon my restricted time already. Thank you all very much for your kindness and pray that we can somehow, during the course of this day, remember these devotees and discuss them and achieve their mercy in trying to attain our own destination in the process of devotional service. Hare Krishna.